Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you. And a warm welcome to the afternoon show. I'm Bill Arnold. The gospel message is the good news of God's grace. So I guess it's pretty important to know what grace is and how we constantly seek to get a better view of what grace does and how it works in our life. And it's so important that we understand that. And I'm so glad to have Dr. Peter Hill back with us. He's a professor of psychology at Rosemead School of Psychology at Biola University in California. And I've had him on before, and I just enjoyed his teaching so much that I thought, please come back and talk to us about grace. Peter, welcome back.
Thank you. It's an honor to be back.
Well, I really enjoy our last conversation, and this topic of grace, really, when it comes down to it, a lot of people will say, yeah, let me see, how would I define grace? What exactly is grace? You know, specifically divine grace, and what does it all involve?
Well, I think most of us are probably familiar with the idea that grace somehow involves unmerited favor. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, in many ways, that's at the heart of what divine grace certainly is. But I think that doesn't, just in itself, doesn't really capture the richness of the concept. And so if we kind of just have a working definition, and I'm going to suggest one here, that grace is the gift of acceptance given unconditionally and voluntarily to an undeserving person by an unobligated giver. Okay, so now the middle part of that is kind of getting at that unmerited favor. Okay, mm-hmm. That it's unconditionally, voluntarily to an undeserving person, but there's also in that definition the term a gift of acceptance. And I'm going to come back to that term a little bit in our discussion later today, I think. But it is a gift, first of all. Grace is a gift. And secondly, it involves some form of acceptance. Now, right now, that's acceptance by God, but I think it's even more complex than that. But also notice that I said it's by an unobligated giver. Now, a lot of times, you know, we enter into human relationships where we do things for each other, and we might even sometimes say, oh, that person was gracious, or that person displayed grace. But oftentimes, it hints at an obligation that's there. In other words, there's sometimes social expectations concerning how the giver and the recipient should normally act. And this would just be standard things in human relationships, neighbor relationships, doing a favor for a neighbor and so forth. But it's suggested that there's a certain degree of obligation that we have as neighbors. Whereas if we're really talking about divine grace, there's absolutely no obligation that God holds. In fact, in some ways, it's more than just simply being unobligated. It's almost being anti-obligated in that there's a complete discharge of social obligations. So I think that's one of the distinctive things about divine grace, that there is really no reason why God had to provide grace to us.
All right, Peter, that's an interesting start. Now, I'm trying to think as hard as I can. I'm processing this because you've given a very interesting definition and divine grace. And when you said that there is no obligation, would you say more about that? Because that's where I got a little confused.
Well, okay. Sometimes in human relationships, when we think about just doing something for each other, sometimes we do feel obligated. Now, I'm gonna get into an idea that's behind this a little bit later, but we establish often our relationships with each other with sort of a model of equity in mind.
I agree.
And I'll give you a real quick example. When I was growing up, I was kind of this, you know, wise guy teenager. And I used to laugh at my parents because my parents and the neighbor, both of them had large backyards and they liked to grow gardens and vegetable gardens. And there was always seems to be a race between who could provide a gift to the neighbor for the first time in the growing season. And I used to kind of make fun of my parents. Well, Mr. Mize, he you know, provided the garden gift first this year, but you're going to go ahead and just return it. So it was kind of neutral. and that's the sense of obligation that most of us carry. We were just invited, my wife and I, over for dinner to a friend's house the other night. We're probably going to want to reciprocate that sure. at some point. God doesn't have that metric. That's not in the cards for God, I don't think, because simply we can't repay. So that's what I mean by the fact that it's an unobligated giver when we're talking about divine grace.
We have no bargaining chip, right? We have nothing he wants.
No, we really don't. That's right. That's well put.
Okay. All right. Why is grace so important, Dr. Peter Hill?
Well, I think it's important because we have to understand why God wants to offer this free gift. And I think more than anything great from God's perspective, at least as it's portrayed to us in the writings of the Apostle Paul, that grace is intended to build relationship. And that's what God wants from us. It is the experiential nature of this relationship that provides a much more thorough and rich pleasure that we should be having in apprehending grace and in grasping what, and there's something good and beautiful about that divine grace that's being offered. But we're not going to, you know, it's going to be more than just some form of knowledge or some, it's more than a concept. As a matter of fact, my friend Mark McMinn, I think I quoted him last time I was on your show. I read other people besides Mark, but he had a very interesting statement back around 2008 in a book that he wrote about grace. And he said, somewhere along the journey of being raised evangelical and then staying in the evangelical church as an adult, I picked up a view of sin and grace that was quite forensic in nature. That is, sin's a violation of God's moral will, and grace is God's decision to forgive our sins through the life and work of Jesus. Now, he says, I still hold to this view, but I'm gaining a new appreciation for the relational context of the Christian story. It's not that God comes up with some arbitrary rules and then rewards or punishes us based on our compliance. Rather, God's relational and created us to be relational. The power of God's love is the most remarkable part of the Christian narrative. So I think once we, you know, going back to Philip Yancey back a couple of decades ago, and what's so amazing about grace, once we experience it more fully, we will, with clenched fists, want to hold on to it very tightly. And when we do hold on to grace, we make significant steps towards becoming the fully actualized person that God intends us to be.
Mm-hmm. I guess as Dr. Peter Hill, obviously, if you just joined us, you don't know what we're talking about, but it's a critical topic, central feature of Christianity, and that is grace. And because you had mentioned something, Peter, just now, what is the difference do you see between obedience and compliance?
Obedience is where I think have an authority who is saying that you must do something, and therefore your motivation is to simply obey that authority. Compliance tends to be where that authority asks you to do something, and you do it, but you're doing it because it's in the form of a question more, or a request, I guess, would be the better way to identify it. So in some ways, you know, God is not making us to accept grace. God is asking us to accept his grace. So I would say it's more in the form of a compliance versus an obedience.
Mm-hmm. All right. Psychologists, colleagues of yours who study religious experience, do they focus much on the concept of grace?
No. And that's been surprising because, I mean, grace is such a central concept, at least to Christians. And since most of the research that's been done by psychologists who study religion has focused on Christians, in part because most of the researchers are here in the West, and most of them are more familiar with Christianity, not that they necessarily abide in the faith, but at least they're more familiar with it. So you'd think, with this being such a central concept, that this would have been discovered by psychologists of religion. And it's not. Quite honestly, I'm not sure why, except that I think it doesn't fit well with a lot of their conceptions or their theoretical models for studying religion. So if you talk about rituals, if you talk about different religious practices, if you talk about certain beliefs that we have, those are topics that psychologists are pretty comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept of grace, and of course we can't study divine grace, not as psychologists, we can't study divine grace directly. All we can study is people's perceptions of divine grace and how it works in their lives. So I think the door has been open, and I was fortunate enough to, along with a couple other colleagues, to co-author a paper, and we were able, surprisingly, to get it accepted in a mainstream psychological journal on the notion of divine grace and perceptions of divine grace. So as I said, it was surprising to us. We thought, well, we'll toss it out there, but we don't think it'll get accepted, but it did.
Wow. Congratulations. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to take a little break. Peter, about 8.5 minutes ago, you dropped this little tease. You said gift of acceptance. And I want to get to that when we come back from the break. Dr. Peter Hill is my guest. We're talking about grace. And don't you love that topic? I can't get enough of talking about grace. We'll be right back.
Anne texted me, and then we had a conversation on the phone. She's 86 years old, and her husband, Bob, is 96. She listens to the podcast every single day, and she gets a lot of encouragement for her walk of faith in the midst of a life that has grown difficult and weary in many ways. Anne has a Faith Radio story, and so do you. If Faith Radio is a part of your daily journey with God, we'd love to hear your story. Share how God is using Faith Radio to encourage you and help you grow at myfaithradio.com. And who knows, maybe Anne will hear your story and be encouraged as well.
Hi, this is Bill. I thought this interview was so good, I wanted you to hear it again. So enjoy. I'm back with Dr. Peter Hill. We're talking about grace today. So Peter, in the first segment, you had said the gift of acceptance when you were giving us a definition of grace, but you kind of left it at that. So I'm going to ask you now to maybe say more about the gift of acceptance.
Sure. You know, by stressing the relational nature of grace, the gift of acceptance is a gift by God of accepting us. And accepting all who we are, including our sin, our shortcomings as humans. But it's also, because it's relational, there has to be a dialectic that's involved here. And that means that there has to be the notion of that we are willing to accept. And that's also a gift. And that's, of course, going to be sometimes difficult for us to do, and I hope we can get to that before the end of the hour. But I have been very much influenced by the theologian John Barclay, and he has talked about grace as a gift. He has a book out, and I actually right here during the break, I tried to put my hands on it to give you the exact title, and I can't find it, so I apologize for that. But and it's not an easy read by any stretch of the imagination, but I want to sum up a few things that he has to say about this gift of acceptance. He tried to understand why it was that what Paul's message was so counterintuitive to the Jewish culture in which he was writing and living. And Barclay identified, so he looked at in the Jewish culture, really how are gifts conceptualized and thought about. And he came up with six or seven. I'm going to only mention about four or five of the different things that Barclay came up with based upon his study. One thing that he found was the lavishness of the gift is very important. In fact, he calls all of this a perfecting grace. And by that, he means how we use the word sometimes like the perfect storm. It's these things that kind of come together that create a perfect storm. Or maybe it's some very annoying person. We call them the perfect pain that we have in our social relationships. What is it that when it brings together is the extreme of the concept? And so he says one thing is the lavishness of the gift. Well, that applies quite well to the lavishness of God's gift to us through giving of his son and sacrificing his son. Actually, Barclay calls this the notion of superabundance. And then another thing that Barclay talked about was the timing of the gift. In other words, is it prioritized? And yet, this is yet another perfection of grace. It's that the giver of the grace takes the initiative in the giving process. And so is under no obligation due to previous circumstances. It's just that the recipient's only the beneficiary and did nothing to influence the process. Another one I think is really very important is what Barclay refers to as the efficacy of this. And, you know, efficacy, that's just kind of a fancy term that does grace have its intended effect? And in Jewish culture, when you gave a gift, it was supposed to have some sort of meaning behind it. And of course, with the gift of God's son, it leads to redemption and restoration of a desired relationship with humanity. Then there's also the notion of circularity, or in the case of divine grace, non-circularity. In other words, with humans, as I pointed out earlier with my example of my parents and the next door neighbor, there's often this give and take. There's often this sense of obligation. It's sort of a social norm that we want to respond favorably to being given something. And so we want to give something back. It's that notion of equity in social relationships. That's not available. That's not our option, as we pointed out earlier. And so it's a non-circular type of relationship that's there. And then most of these things kind of fit with Paul's notion of divine grace. But there was one that really didn't fit. And this is what makes it stand out, makes divine grace stand out from grace that humans might have. And that is that it's not given in accordance with the goodness of the recipient. In other words, in Jewish culture, the beneficiary had to be deserving of that grace, of that gift. And in contrast, the Christian conception of divine grace as promised by Paul was that the goodness of the recipient had nothing to do with God's grace. So he referred to this, Barclay referred to this as the incongruity of grace. And he feels that that's was highlighted by Paul, and that's what distinguishes God's grace from all other perfecting graces better than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Doctor.
So that's the notion that there's this gift of acceptance that we just simply have to, especially that note, that last part that we talked about here, this incongruity, mm-hmm. that we just have to take that, live with it, and accept that. That's just going to be something that we don't have to, we cannot repay, and we don't have to, and we should actually take some pleasure in that.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Peter Hill is my guest, talking about grace. Now, Peter, when I think of this Jewish tradition where you're hoping that the gift has an intended effect on the person receiving the gift, is that where we got that idea from Jewish tradition? Because I think to this day, we still give gifts that are designed to have an intended effect on whoever we're giving it to.
Well, I don't know if it originated with Jewish tradition, but it was certainly in place when Paul was writing. And so the culture at that time, and it wasn't only the Jewish tradition, but it was also apparently a tradition that folks in other parts of the world where Paul was doing his mission work, that they understood that to be the case. I think that's pretty much built into human nature.
Yeah.
That when we want to do something for somebody, we want it to have some sort of intended effect. We have a reason for usually being gracious unto others.
And I would agree completely. So, Peter, how does this line up with a biblical understanding of grace?
Well, again, the biblical understanding of grace is rooted in first of all, in why God has given and made this a priority in his relationship. And it's the desire for fallible human beings to be able to respond to a holy and perfect and sovereign God. And so if it was anything else, if there was some sort of metric that was being used, if some sort of score was being kept, we would all be losers. We just simply cannot keep up with a holy God. But that's not what God intended. God wants us to be in relationship with him, and he has this out of his superabundance, motivation to maintain relationship with his creation. So it fits, I think, right in. Now, there's all sorts of problems that a lot of people have about this. Sometimes we want to earn that. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can get into this topic of merit and why it is so tempting to say, well, can't we just simply earn this? Why can't we do something that justifies God's grace? And that's a complex topic. I don't know if we have time before the break to get into that one or not.
Well, we don't have time before the break to get into it, but maybe just a little bit of a tease and we'll pick it up on the other side.
Okay. Well, certainly there's this concept that we'll talk about that's the belief in a just world. And most people, what's at the foundation of that belief is that people get what they deserve, okay? And that's quite contrary to the notion of divine grace. We're not getting what we deserve. And so let's talk about why that's such a powerful concept that people seem to naturally gravitate toward.
I think that's awesome. Dr. Peter Hill is my guest. He's a professor of psychology at Rosemead School of Psychology at Biola University in Southern California. We're talking about grace today. If you heard anything that you need more clarification on, or maybe a question for Peter, text it over 877-933-2484. Again, 877-933-2484. Be right back with Dr. Peter Hill.
Show with Bill Arnold.
All right, what is grace and specifically divine grace? That's what we're talking about today with Dr. Peter Hill. He's a psychology professor at Rosemead School of Psychology, which is at Biola University in La Mirinda, California. And Peter, right before the break, you made some comment about people think, well, wouldn't it just be better if I could just earn it? So maybe we can get to the question of merit.
Sure. Yeah, that's so central to the way that we establish so much of our relationship. I mentioned this concept of belief in a just world, that people get what we think they deserve, whether that be something good or something bad. And that's just so foundational. That's something that psychologists have studied for decades. Some of that is based upon our desire to have some sense of control, not in a negative sort of way, but more of a cognitive control in understanding the world. And so this whole notion of divine grace and that it's just not something based upon merit is in some ways just confuses some folks, I think. And it's just hard for them to understand it and for that matter to accept it. So earlier I talked about different ways in which the Jewish culture in particular understood gifts and gift giving. And one of those was this notion of efficacy, that there should be, you know, some intended influence of the gift. And I think that's central to also divine grace, that God, again, has an intention behind this gift of acceptance, that despite all of our failings, despite the fact that we cannot possibly live up to the kind of holy and perfect life on our own, that God offers this as a gift to us. And our job is simply to accept it and not to think that we can somehow earn it. So Tullian Chavinjan, who has written about this, and in his book in 2013 on one-way love, he gave the example, he went to the biblical example of Zacchaeus. And, you know, I'm familiar with the story of Zacchaeus, but I hadn't really thought it through, just how powerful, how transforming the power of grace was in that Luke 19 biblical account. What's overlooked in the story by most of us is the fact that Zacchaeus was the chief tax collector for Rome, which meant that he was not only despised by the Jewish authorities as a traitor working for Rome, but also that he was extremely rich from ill-gotten taxes, including skimming money from some of the other tax collectors under his authority. So Tullian Chavinjan, I always have trouble pronouncing his name, said, you know, in some ways, Zacchaeus was the Bernie Madoff of his day. And you might remember who Bernie Madoff was. He was the man who, by the way, died in 2021, who bilked $65 billion from his client and was sentenced to 250 years in prison. And Zacchaeus was that type of individual, maybe not to that extreme, I don't know. Yet Christ insisted on visiting Zacchaeus in his house. And Zacchaeus was incredibly transformed to the point that he said, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." So this was a guy that wasn't caught and was in a plea bargain. He was somebody who was transformed by the grace of God, by the grace of Christ. I have another contemporary example of this. Some folks of your listeners might be familiar with the name Everett Worthington. Everett Worthington is a fine Christian professor of psychology at Virginia Commonwealth. He recently retired, but he is a leading authority on the topic of forgiveness. And incidentally, forgiveness was a topic 30 years ago that psychologists hadn't thought anything about, but it took a Christian to bring it into the mainstream of psychology. And today there's just loads of research done on forgiveness. Well, Ev, in his early days of studying forgiveness and really promoting it, had an incredible experience. He got a phone call on January 1, about 1995 or so, and he was told that his mother was murdered the night before. Today, Ev goes and visits that young man in jail and spends time with him and has actually befriended him. And that's a transforming power of grace. That's one of the best examples I can think of on a human-to-human level.
That's so powerful. Yeah, we're talking about forgiveness, and we're having Forgiveness Day in the month of June, and that's a story I would love to focus on, because that is a story that most people say, I don't know how to wrap my head around that. How does a person come to that place where they visit the person who murders their mother and somehow befriends them, of all things?
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Yeah. So, Peter, can you see the difference between grace and mercy? And I'm thinking of a particular scene in a particular movie, and I remember talking to someone about it, and it was the movie Les Miserables, and it's the confrontation between the bishop and Jean Valjean. And of course, he is dragged back by police after stealing his candlesticks and his silverware, knocking him out. And he walks in, and the bishop says, Jean Valjean, I'm so mad at you. You forgot the candlestick. And he puts the candlestick in the bag, and the police are befuddled. And he said, well, no. I gave them these things. And I'm glad he came back because he forgot something. And you're now free to release him. And the police take off the handcuffs and walk out. And the bishop says to him, I've given you your life back. Go do something with it. And I was saying, that's probably one of the most beautiful occasions of grace. And the friend I was talking to said, no, that was mercy he was showing, not grace.
Well, it is hard to distinguish between the two. I think mercy is something that we can show to people, but that they have the ability to perhaps do something in response. And we give them that opportunity. The only thing we can do with grace is accept it. And there isn't that opportunity that we can somehow pay back. So maybe that's what your friend was making more reference to, that there still was an opportunity for a paying back in this example that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm. But when you talk about the transforming power of grace, some of these stories and these examples are so powerful. And I think we all look for indications in our own life. Have I been transformed by the power of grace? Do I show that kind of forgiveness? Do I show that kind of love, patience with other people?
Yeah, and I think so often our tendency is to think about, well, grace is a license. You know, it's a license. Well, okay, I don't do very well in something, but God will display his grace to me and forgive me of that. And yes, that's true, but that should not be our motivating factor. It should be, is there something, do we really take pleasure in grace? Is it something that is going to further develop us into the kind of person that's honoring to God? And allow grace simply to take over in that sense. And that's quite different than this notion that, well, I can get away with something because God is a gracious God.
Mm-hmm. So, Peter, when we talk about grace and specifically divine grace, what caliber of grace can we offer other people? I don't know if that's a question you understand, but if God is offering us this divine grace, what can we turn around and offer someone else?
Well, you know, a common thing is, first of all, to let people know why we're doing this, and that we too value relationships on a horizontal level, just as God has displayed it to us on a vertical level. And so we want to model to have Christ's and God's grace towards us be a model for our grace towards human beings. Now, there's a different dynamic that's going on, because so many of those things that we talked about, like especially circularity, so often there's this notion that there's kind of a catch between it. It's sort of like the salesperson who's giving his client tickets to the ball game. There's usually a catch that's there. And so it's often difficult for people to really fully experience the grace that we might want to show. But I think we have to be real careful to make sure that we don't have some sort of expectation for that person to display grace back to us. We want to make sure that we're especially not doing this in a manner that takes advantage of anybody, particularly people who are in less privileged positions. So a boss has to be very careful with an employee, for example, in offering grace, because it could be understood that there's going to be some form of repayment that has to take place.
Mm-hmm. Peter, ever since we started this discussion today, I've had the song Amazing Grace in my head.
Yeah.
What is so amazing about grace?
The idea that God, in his humility, in the humility of Christ, to obey what God's plan was here, and to offer that unconditional, voluntary grace to us. Unless we have an understanding of our sin in our lives, we won't fully comprehend what's so amazing about grace. You know, the Israelites. I've been reading in Kings, and that's a depressing. Those two books are depressing, First and Second Kings. But now I'm just getting into Ezra, and it's how the people disobeyed and did not honor God, and yet eventually God brought them back. He gave them their homeland back. And that's the whole notion of being an exile, I think, is this notion of being away from God, out of relationship with God. You're away from where you should be. You're away from your home. That's what's so amazing about grace. He wants to bring us home.
So good. All right, Peter, let me take a little break. Dr. Peter Hill is my guest as we're discussing grace. If you have any questions or comments, something you heard you'd like Peter to say more about, text it over, 877-933-2484. Again, 877-933-2484. When we come back, I want to ask him why it is so hard to accept God's grace. It's always a good time to show Christ's love to a hurting world through acts of kindness. So you can join our Kindness Always initiative at myfaithradio.com. You should check it out. And if you want to receive a daily email featuring a nice scripture graphic, you can sign up for the Verse of the Day email also at myfaithradio.com. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. If you have questions about Jesus or want to chat with someone about it, text FAITH to 41224. That's text FAITH to 41224. And God bless you. Welcome back to the show. If you just climbed in your car, I hope you had a great day. Dr. Peter Hill is my guest. We're talking about grace, God's grace. And I've been enjoying the discussion. If you missed any of it, I always encourage you to go hear the podcast, because it's all there at myfaithradio.com. All right, Peter, let's ask the big question. Why is it so hard to accept God's grace?
You know, I've heard a lot of terms that have been used about grace. Counterintuitive, radical, scandalous. And I think all of this suggests that there must be some impediments to fully apprehending and experiencing God's grace. I think a couple of them that I've already mentioned, this belief in a just world, Somehow we sort of live with this metric in the back of our minds, maybe implicitly, that somehow we have to get just what we deserve, and we don't deserve much as fallen individuals. And so there might be some folks who just say, I'm not worthy. I'm not worth. There's so much shame in my life. And a related concept to that, I think, is this notion that when we talked about efficacy, I think so often when we talk about, well, what are the fruits, we often define those in human terms. And yet it seems like grace is saying, no, God is saying, define it by my terms. And my terms are accepted. Live in it. Take pleasure in it. And try to live up to it. But that's not the standard that I'm going to pull it away from you if you don't meet that standard. And I think that's very difficult. God certainly desires us to have change and that we are transformed, as we talked about it. But I think it's poor to think that God needs our sense of indebtedness to him, that somehow our sense of indebtedness has to be repaid. Again, God may desire such results, but I think it's poor theology, and I say this as a non-theologian, to say that an infinitely resourced God needs us to repay. And so with regards to efficacy, even though it may be that God desires for us to live a life full of grace and truth, exactly what that means and how it's impacted by human standards of what it means to measure up, I think we can become confused very quickly. Mm-hmm. I know I have, it from time to time, likely developed false standards of what holiness means that really runs contrary to God's notion of grace. We can, you know, I think that sometimes gets into some of the seeds of legalism that some folks really struggle with. So I think that's one thing. Another reason, I think, is this notion that I've already mentioned as well, and that is that we really do try to establish a sense of equity in our social relationships. Now, in social relationships, sometimes there's inequity that's built into the structure of the relationship. For instance, a boss and an employee, or a teacher and a student, that one has more authority or more privilege or whatever, however you want to think about it, than the other person does. But even then, so for instance, a boss, if there's the tradition of gift giving, for instance, at Christmas time, it might be expected that the boss should be providing a nicer gift to the employee who doesn't at all receive nearly the compensation that the boss does. Well, so that's a sense of equity, once again, that's built into the relationship. And to have this kind of disparity that we have with God, of who God is and what God has done and God's love and God's perfection compared to us as sinners, it's just simply impossible to maintain any sense of the notion of equity in the relationship. But people want that equity. And so I think at times, you know, I've got to pay back. I've got to give God something because God has done so much for me. That's keeping the individual, I believe, from fully experiencing God's grace, divine grace.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Peter Hill is my guest. Peter, what are some important implications of God's grace in terms of, let's say, how we live our lives?
Yeah, I recently had a conversation with a 20-something individual, not a student of mine, somebody who attends the church I attend, and she's really doubting whether or not she's doubting her salvation, basically. And one of the things that I just simply wanted to tell her, and I did say it, but I wanted to say it gently, and that is, relax. You know, the fact that you are struggling with this is a good sign. It's a sign that God is working in your life. But she was so shamed based upon her doubts, based upon some of her behaviors that she was involved in, that she just couldn't see that. And I think that's where a lot of people struggle. And sometimes in human relationships, when we run across that, it was so tempting to say, well, why don't you do this? Or why don't you do that? Try this. And what I think was really the message that she needed to hear was God's grace is much greater than all of our sin. And she, I don't know if she heard that message or not, but that's the message that I hope she was going to hear.
Mm-hmm. When I think of grace and the immeasurable spiritual riches that we receive and how grace helps us in every one of our needs, it really is something I could sit and think about a lot every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the word, I like the fact that you use the word immeasurable there because, you know, everything that we've talked about almost deals with measurement, how we measure so much of how we live our lives.
Yeah.
And yet we're talking about something that's immeasurable. Yeah.
But Peter, if I think about grace in my life, I know grace comforts me. I know grace encourages me. And I know for a fact that grace strengthens me.
Yes. It does. It does all of those things. I mean, there should be nothing that you should take greater pleasure in.
Right.
Than God's grace. Yeah.
And one day God's grace will justify me before a holy God.
That's right. That's right. And welcomes you
into that,
you know, very intimate relationship that we have now. Eternity starts now, but it goes on, and it's even more wonderful as time goes by.
You often hear Christians talk about any success they might have in their personal life or their ministry. Or if you congratulate them on something, they're quick to say, you know, that was the grace of God that was in me that was able to do that. And they quickly want to deflect any kind of attention from themselves onto the grace of God. I think Paul did that as well. He was always quick to point out the grace of God that was within him. And, you know, Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. So that gift of grace is greater than any sin we're ever going to have in our life, and that abundant gift of grace is something that's new every morning, grace and mercy.
Yes, yes, right. I do think that just the constant reminder that we have to make to provide to ourselves and every morning, just to not glibly thank the Lord that he has saved us, that he has given us new life, but to really sit and ponder about that. And I think more than anything else, there's a certain humility that God had to have in all of this process to reach down and say, I want you, my creation, to have that kind of relationship with me.
Mm. I'm so reminded that the gift of grace is free to me, but it was not free to Jesus, that's for sure.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the beautiful gift of salvation, that grace that comes with that is such an extravagant gift. And thinking about it almost brings me to tears.
Yeah. Super abundance.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, Peter, such an interesting discussion. I love talking about grace, and I'm always reminded that grace is, there's no shortage of grace. It comes pouring out of heaven for us, and it's a magnificent thing.
Yes, very much so.
Well, thank you for spending time with my listeners today and coming back on the show. It's been a delight having you.
I appreciate it. Really appreciate what the ministry that you have there.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate you saying that. Have a great rest of the night.
You too.
All right. Hey, I don't know if you've downloaded the Faith Radio app. Go to your app store and check it out. I have to say, it's a It's a beautiful app. I've got mine on my iPhone. And when you download it, you just can't believe how pretty it is. And you open it up, and it's very easy to navigate your way through it. And you can listen to Faith Radio live, or you can just check out the podcast. It doesn't matter where you go. You can download if you've got that Faith Radio app. So give it a try. And if you don't like it, it's easy just to delete it off your phone. But I'm pretty sure you'll keep it. We will take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.